Mirror Stardate 95621.49. My name is Mike, and you're listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. Guys, we're back. With me is
Clyde
and Grant. Today, we're going to talk about the return of Star Trek Discovery. It's been 2 months, and the show comes back with a batshit crazy episode. I thought the last episode, the finale, was probably the craziest episode we've seen on the show. Mm-hmm. But this one was nuts. Like, okay, hot takes real quick. Well, I'm so excited to talk about this.
It's pretty exciting.
I'm just like jumping the gun. Okay, anybody know the name of the episode? I don't have it in front of me.
Episode 10 is called Despite Yourself.
Oh.
A little bit of a clever title because, I don't know, I thought of it as like spiting yourself because the mirror image of you is a loathsome antithesis of you in a way, right?
It can be. Definitely.
Maybe that's what they're going at a little bit.
I can see that. Despite yourself, yeah.
Definitely taking the binary theme as far as it can go in this episode, zapping us to the mirror universe. Okay, first, before we do our hot takes, guys.
Okay.
Did you guys know that this was going to be a mirror episode? Did anybody guess that?
I believe we've had a couple discussions about what type of universe they went to or what type of location. Either they went ahead in the future or they went to the mirror universe. But I came away from our discussions in the previous, I guess in chapter one of Star Trek Discovery, with the idea that since they've been alluding so much to this duality of character, the like you said, binary, like the binary stars in the very beginning, this challenge against yourself, and especially you think of the Ash character fighting with his inner turmoil, Burnham asking whether or not she's a traitor or she's a true patriot. Like, all of this, it was building up to this sort of identity crisis, and jumping into the mirror universe just fits thematically perfectly into that.
It really does. It feels like the show was engineered to eventually, in the first season, get to the mirror universe with all the themes of duality and the binary themes. It was just the trajectory the show was on. So I figured that's where we would be by this point. Not to mention that a few months ago, Jonathan Frakes, the director of this episode, also Commander William Riker from Next Generation.
And the books I like to read.
And the books you like to read. Pretty much let it slip that this was going to be a mirror episode.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are going deep on kind of looking back at the first chapter and figuring out, oh, this was an homage, this was foreshadowing. I thought it was pretty obvious in the last episode that it was going to be a mirror universe because where they ended up and things being different. That being said, I expected nothing that we saw today.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even jumping to the mirror?
Well, I mean, I expected them to jump to the mirror universe.
Yeah.
But the take on that mirror universe was like, no, I didn't see that coming.
I hear you, yeah. Almost everything else that happened, all the plot points, were pretty unexpected. But before we dive into it more, I want to let everybody know to visit us at StarTrekPod.com. We are a permanent record podcast. Find all of our TV podcasts, like the TV Dudes, The Good Die Young, FemTV, Pilot Watching, and
This Is Us with Key and Clyde.
When does that come back?
It'll be back. We'll record this week, so it'll be back by Friday.
Awesome. So lots of great podcasts for you. PermanentRCRD.com. If you like Star Trek Pod, you'll love the other podcasts we do. And you can also help us out at Patreon. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. We have some bonus audio there. Lots of fun pictures there too, so check that out. Help us, throw us a few pieces of gold press latinum, and we'll be able to keep doing this podcast.
An Issac a day keeps us, our poverty at bay. I don't know what the term is.
Oh, an Issac. Yeah. from the episode. I was like, what?
Nice.
What, Grant? Nice.
Grant going with the deep references.
Yeah.
I think I missed, because, okay, those of you who are just tuning into our podcast who haven't heard us, we record these podcasts like an hour after the episode airs. So we're coming on the mics hot, fresh.
Excited.
And most of us are taking notes throughout the show while we're watching it. So I miss stuff. Like, I'm watching this show and I'm so into it, but I'm looking at my computer. So I think I missed a few things going here. So Listener, I just say that because the conversation also continues online on Twitter, on Facebook. Just go to StarTrekPod.com, find us on Twitter and Facebook. And if we do miss anything, hey, let us know.
Hey, Grant, I want to ask you about that line, though. I thought it fell a little flat. What'd you think?
It was a little bit corny, but I don't know. And she's like, I don't know what an Issik is. It's just some old Vulcan catchphrase or something. See, I was like, okay.
You see, I missed that. I was busy writing notes.
She let it out, and even Tyler looked up like, what? That's when I was like, oh, it's not just me.
I was like, wait, who wrote this script?
Tyler, you mean Valk?
We're gonna get on that.
All right,
we're
gonna talk about that. Clyde, you were talking about how so much of this episode was unexpected. Give me your hot take. What'd you feel about this episode?
I thought it was really fascinating from a creativity and innovation standpoint. And what I mean by that is it wasn't super predictable. There were some things in it that challenged. So you're in this mirror universe. Who saw Tilly as the captain, right? Like, Tilly stabbed the former captain in the sleep.
It was foretold, though, in the very first episode.
I mean, yes, if you look back now, you see it.
It was in an early episode where Stamets was like, he comes out of his tardigrade funk and was like, he calls Tilly captain.
Captain, yes, yeah. You're right. Like, it's, but still, to see it was surprising to think about the fact that Burnham and Lorca aren't in this universe. Like, they're just these bits and pieces. I thought it was pulled together pretty interesting. And it's got me really fascinated about how long they're going to be in this universe, what happens. Because I think in a traditional Star Trek series, this is an episode.
Yeah, or a two-parter maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Like, at most, you're talking about two episodes, right? Yeah. But I get the feeling, at the very least, that they're in this mirror universe for the remainder of the season.
I would love that.
Right. And who knows how long, or, I'm guessing or wondering if this is going to be like Sliders, where they never quite make it back to their universe.
Sliders.
Yeah. And they're just like popping from, quantum universe to quantum universe. But yeah, I thought it was really riveting from the moment. I mean, lots of action, lots of intrigue. And then the big reveal that Tyler is Valk.
Well, we got a reveal that he, not necessarily that he's Valk. I mean, obviously he probably is, but no one really said that.
I mean, it seems a little bit more like there is an Ash and there is a Valk in there, and he's like a Manchurian candidate.
Right, and Ash is a personality that was crafted possibly on top of a Klingon who we think is Valk.
Yeah, so they genetically modified Valk to look like a human, a super sexy human, and then just dropped in this Ash personality who seems to have like a history and background that he thinks is real, but now he's getting these flashbacks and he's like, what?
Yeah. Did you find that compelling? And what else did you feel about this episode, Grant?
Yeah, I really dug the whole of this episode. I love the montage sequence with them getting their whole costume together to
look
like. It was
so silly.
That was nice.
Yeah, to look like, what's a evil fleet called?
The Empire.
Terran Empire?
Terran Empire.
So,
long live the Empire.
Yeah. I love that whole sequence. I love the just kind of trying to get their bearings and us, the audience, having a little bit of a better idea. At least us, who have been podcasting and discussing it a little bit more in depth, and I guess Star Trek, a little bit more diehard fans, are like, oh, it's a mirror universe, and here's what this will probably mean for all these people we're going to encounter. Well, so it's fascinating kind of seeing all of them interact with the evil goatee-stroking doppelgangers, I guess.
So I think one thing that you said that's really interesting, Grant, is that they did a great job of explaining what this mirror universe is without going into dialogue about the mirror universe.
Turning to the camera going, this is the mirror universe. Everyone here is a little bit more evil.
The exposition was done really well. Yeah. Pretty entertaining.
Which I think is important for this show because, I'm a Trekkie. My wife isn't.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Okay.
But so what happens is we find ourselves talking about television with people all the time. And when people ask, okay, what's your favorite show? And I'm like, right now, my favorite show is Star Trek Discovery. And they will frequently be like, really? And she's like, no, no, it's great. And I'm not even into sci-fi. And I think you have a lot of those viewers. And so the way they did it, I think, is perfect for the novice Trekkie. Like, and not just the novice Trekkie, like Grant, but like the novice sci-fi person. I mean, because if you think about CBS All Access, they got two shows right now, right? Two exclusive shows. The Good Fight and Star Trek Discovery. So if you're getting the Good Fight viewers over on this, which is bizarre.
I wonder what the Venn diagram between Discovery and Good Fight viewers looks like.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to be able to understand this in a really kind of cool and intelligent way.
Yeah, I think the exposition, the storytelling here, and all season, what the show has been doing has been succeeding at telling a story for Star Trek diehards and for new viewers. They're really hitting that sweet spot for the most part.
You're right.
And here, this could have been a challenge. Oh, we had to explain what a parallel universe is. We had to explain that, hey, there's two Discoveries here, and maybe we're taking the place of the Discovery that's supposed to be here. Like, and then you have everything that's going on that's complicated with Ash, and that poor Wilson Cruz had just a mouthful of technobabble he had to spew in this scene to kind of explain what's going on with Ash. I feel sorry for him for that. I also feel sorry for him because of what happened to him in this episode.
For his sore neck.
Yeah. You know what? There's a good chance that we're going to find another Wilson Cruz in sure. this universe.
Yeah.
Or this one could just have a broken neck. I mean, I don't know. Whenever they show those scenes, it could go one of two ways, right? Either he has just a broken neck and he's in a collar, or he's paralyzed or something.
Yeah.
Or dead.
Well, did anybody watch a bit of the after show with Matt Myra?
No.
5 minutes.
Okay. I watched like up to the first act, the commercial break, and Wilson Cruz was on, as well as the two showrunners.
And Laurel.
Yeah. And they both very much, well, the showrunners and Wilson Cruz very much tease that this isn't the last we've seen of the Doctor, Dr. Kolber. And Wilson Cruz very much, and Wilson Cruz said something to the fact of one of his favorite scenes playing that character has not yet aired. So either we're looking at a flashback or something in the future, maybe a mirror version of the Doctor. But the showrunner, Aaron Harberts, he was talking about how he was worried about killing off the character in this episode of the Doctor. And he talked about how this the audience reaction to the first gay relationship on Star Trek has been very positive. And he was worried about seemingly ripping that away from the viewers.
It does seem like a very tragic trope that yeah. the gay characters, if there's presented a good solid relationship, they all too often die. And that was something I was a little bit disappointed to see, like Colbert dying here. And I'm yeah. like, man, better get to see more of the character, because I also really like Wilson Cruz.
You know, it worked for me in the moment when it happened, because it was such a shocking moment, such a dark moment.
A good threat.
And yeah. I really felt it, and it made Ash such a threat. But then a minute later, I thought about, okay, I really hate the bury your gaze trope. And I think that's what's happening here.
Well, and I mean, I watched it, and as it was kind of unfolding, I just kept thinking, all right, this is kind of simple. He's telling everything, right? Well, there's got to be something. Basically, I'm not going to let you continue, and so I have to kill him. And I was looking at it from a business standpoint. This is CBS All Access. This is their huge gamble, right? The last thing you can do is take two of your favorite characters, people who are on the cover of March's Advocate magazine, and then just rip that apart. Like, I was watching it and I saw some of the after show, and I'm thinking, there's got to be more Wilson Cruz. There's yeah. got to be something.
Aaron Harbert's pretty much stopped short of saying this relationship isn't over. Actually, no, he did say the relationship that you care about between Kolber and Stamets is still going to evolve on the show. And he called it an epic relationship that is still going to evolve. So it's not the last we've seen of the relationship. It's not the last we've seen of these characters together moving forward. And Wilson Cruz actually seemed really chipper on the after show. So I don't think he's gone forever.
I wonder what the idea is there, because is it that we're going to see the mirror universe one that kind of comes in and we see if a relationship can still kind of work out there among those two? Or is it that Kolber is somehow going to be invalid or at least injured for a while, and he's going to be in sick bay next to Stamets. Like, I'm curious if we're going to have that version or if we're going to have this whole other version, despite the fact that they've already spent a few episodes establishing a good, believable relationship between these two characters.
You know, you brought in the possibility that maybe Kolber isn't dead, maybe he just snapped his neck and he's going to be in sick bay for a while. That thought did not cross my mind at all, because if they are going to bring him back and continue that love relationship between these two characters, I think the more fertile storytelling ground would be that, yeah, he died, but we've been told that Stamets can see and perhaps jump throughout space and time. So maybe we're going to get some kind of story where Stamets has to bend time to get back to the person he loves.
Well, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see if what happens as these stories kind of unfold is if we get a discovery that is filled with people from different universes.
Mm.
So maybe we pick up the crews from this universe.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the season, we jump to another and we're picking up different characters.
So can we jump over and talk about Stamets a little bit then?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because now that we have this bigger it's not a confirmation, I guess, but now that we have this better idea of this other universe, I think that kind of plays into what we were seeing over the course of chapter one of the season of what was going on with Stamets. Because now it seems a little bit more clear to me that Stamets in our original universe was merging with the other one. And that's right. Where we're getting the duality of personality, because the uptight dickhead Stamets that we were used to suddenly going to this chill, laid back hippie version wasn't so much that he was tripping on spores so much as the other personality of the other version of him was shifting into the driver's seat
or influencing him a lot. Yeah.
So now he was like, because his opposite version of him would actually be a nicer guy, right?
Right.
Like, potentially.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know if it's opposite. I think it's one of many.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this universe, everybody's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah, it does seem like
so.
They're I'm all thinking, just like, no, fuck you. It's like super.
Shipper Stamets is Alpha. From some other universe.
Captain Killy.
Yeah.
Captain Killy.
Okay, I'm with you there, because we did get a scene before Dr. Kolber dies where he goes over to Stamets and kisses him. And that seems to reawaken, like the milky eyes go away and we get a return to normal Stamets. And he warns him that the threat is here and then he goes away. So it seemed like
you could have said something a little bit better, like, Ash is going to kill you.
Something less cryptic, man.
So I had a small, tiny problem with that scene.
Saw your eyes roll, man. What's up with that?
I didn't need the Sleeping Beauty kind of trope. Like,
yeah.
He's there. He's been crazy all episode. But a kiss, and he wakes up. Like, I was kind of like, really?
But it's good for, like, multiple reasons, you know? Seeing that relationship actually have at least another kiss before you go and kill off that character.
I don't have a problem with the kiss. I had the problem with the waking up and like, oh, hey, what's up? How you doing? And then going, like, I was just thinking.
Yeah, it's a little corny.
It was a little corny.
Okay, since we're talking about Stamets, what do you guys think the palace is? He was warning everybody about the palace.
I was going to ask you guys if you had some sort of reference to a palace in Star Trek's of past.
You know, there might be. The last few Mirror Universe Trek episodes I've seen were Deep Space Nine. And, they didn't really do a lot of mythology with the Terran stuff on DS9. So I don't even remember them referencing an emperor or a palace. So Clyde, do you have any?
No, I don't. And so part of me is excited because I think there's this idea that there is something new coming, that we're going to understand something new. I think what's also fascinating about that is that they've been here, not this particular crew, but people from, I guess I'll call it kind of the Prime universe,
Prime,
have been here before. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting.
They're talking about the Defiant.
Yes.
Which is, you did some research on this, right?
I did a little bit of research
on this. Because I thought it was a DS9 reference, but I was like, wait, that can't be.
It is a DS9 and a Star Trek, the movie, the First Contact. And so there was a USS Defiant. It became a Defiant class. I mean, the ship that they're referring to is the first purposefully built warship of the Federation. I mean, this thing is bad. And it did end up in this Terran Empire universe before.
So it was a DS9 Defiant?
It was a DS9 Defiant.
But did it go back in time?
That I haven't been able to figure out what happened. So I was looking to figure out. I got stuck on this rabbit trail. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to know was what happened to it. Was it left there? But apparently Sisko and Jake was captured by, I think, his mother in this universe, and Sisko went to get him.
Okay. Well, that does happen, actually. No, that does happen in a mirror universe in a DS9 episode. However, DS9 is in the future of this. Yes. So I just looked this up. There is another Defiant. Uh-huh. There is a USS Defiant NCC 1764 that was a 23rd century Federation Constitution class starship and one of the three ships known as Defiant. Okay, so this wasn't DS9's Defiant.
So there was a DS9 Defiant that I think Worf actually lived on at one point.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was basically destroyed by the Borg in First Contact.
Right.
And then they created, there was another USS Sao Paulo that they renamed Defiant, which I think is this one.
No.
Not this one? Okay.
No, it's not. This is an older Defiant. There are three.
My eyes just glazed over milky white.
Real quick. I got to get this right or else the internet will kill us. There was the two Defiants from DS9. And there was one that is Kirk era that is called the Defiant. According to Memory Alpha, that's the one that they were talking about in this show.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I'm wrong, guys, tweet at us at Star Trek Pod. Grant, wake up.
Okay. So
wait. I want to say this. Tweet at Mike. Okay.
Tweet at Star Trek.
Yeah. Harass Mike. So the palace, if we have a Terran Empire and we have references to an emperor, it leads me to believe, story-wise, that they have in their future a run-in with the emperor himself or herself in this mirror universe in some sort of quest to get back to their own universe. And they should avoid that place at all costs because there's going to be ramifications, and that's what Samus is warning us about.
All right, so I'm calling my shot right now on who I think the Emperor is.
Whoa, okay.
I think it's Georgiou.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
a good guess.
Because there's no mention of her being on the Shenzhou when they finally show up at the Shenzhou. And I was wondering, are we going to see Georgiou? Is she going to be in engineering or something? Because she's obviously not the captain of the Shenzhou in the Mirrorverse. But she wasn't there.
Nope. Yeah. And we didn't hear anything about Burnham killing Georgiou to take over.
No.
So it seems like Georgiou left the Shenzhou willingly. My guess, that's who the Emperor is. Which is going to be a really interesting and difficult moment for Burnham when they have this confrontation.
It could be a moment that was foreshadowed in this episode where Burnham sees the helmsman that she knew on the Shenzhou in the Prime Universe. And in this episode, she has to kill his doppelganger.
Cooper,
yeah.
Oh, man. Can you imagine the scene, though, where they're on a planet and they're trying to walk out this new Terran Empire logo into the sand? It's going to be so complicated.
I will say,
not a pretty logo.
That scene in the elevator is one of my favorite.
In this episode? In this
that
episode.
Was a good Jonathan Frakes action scene. Like, he always throws in something that is a little unexpected in his action. He did a great job here.
Yeah, that was cool.
And I just thought that there's this moment because you're looking at Burnham, and we've been really following and getting to know Burnham and seeing this regret, this kind of discovery of who she wants to be. And now here she is, and she has to kill someone who she's already carrying this kind of this regret for having gotten them killed before.
A Michael Burden, if you will.
And so I just thought it was...
Pity laughs.
I thought it was really fascinating that she had to do it. She knew she had to do it.
And she gets a round of applause for doing it.
Yeah.
Because this is a crazy universe, guys, where everybody's an asshole.
I mean, does this seem a little bit over the top? Like, yes. They're all ridiculous villains.
And I love it. It was so nuts. Okay, when they do the salute at the end, long live the Empire, and it's just so silly, and it's a silly place this show had not gone before. For a second, I was like, ugh, this is a little, like, too campy.
It's like their weird Sig Heil kind of thing going on. I'm like, okay.
But a second later, I was like, I'm in. This is cool.
Well,
Let's go.
What we're looking at is, what if the kind of Earth and the Federation was really the Klingons?
I mean, it's like a, right? Like it's a Man in the High Castle thing kind of going on, right?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Alternate universe where, evil took over.
Well, and except this show is fun.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's an interesting commentary on xenophobia, right?
Like, of course.
If you look and go, okay, well, if we hate everybody but us, what does that look like, right? And you get to this point where you start to, once you hate everyone else, you don't trust anyone like you. And so it's really fascinating that we're looking at that and kind of this mirrored version of what Star Trek stands for, when you think that Star Trek typically stands for diversity and unity and peace and the best of mankind, and now we're looking at the absolute worst of mankind.
You know, now that we're in the mirror universe and we're dealing with the Terran Empire, which is this xenophobic empire, it is such a great idea to do this because it allows the show to really explore what Star Trek is about. It is about
contrast ideals, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It's about anti-xenophobia, you know, going out and exploring and making friends. And not only does going to the mirror universe work on a thematic level with the characters, exploring their duality and binary issues, but it works to explore the greatness of what the Federation we know as fans becomes, which is this diverse, you know, multi-planetary harmonious thing.
Are we all worried for Saru then, or Saru?
Saru.
Saru. Are we all new? Like, it's like, uh-oh, that dude shouldn't be on that or in this universe.
Well, he's not the only one, right? There are a couple people. They have a number of people in the crew who probably shouldn't be there. So I think that's going to be interesting.
But don't have doppelgangers.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think also the fascinating bit is what's going to happen to these, I don't want to call them soft, but people like Tilly. Right?
Tilly's working it, man.
Yeah, but
It took her a while, but she's working it.
It's one thing to say a bunch of stuff.
Dude, she nailed it. I mean, she was improvising like this was not actually a problem for her.
Yeah, but what happens when she has to kill someone?
Oh, she'll kill him, man.
Right. Yeah, but will that change her?
You remember her in the third episode where they go on the ship and she's just blaster ready and you're like,
that's
well,
true.
You're all super commando here, yeah. Tilly. She was like more... like gung-ho warrior than most anyone else that went on there.
She looks so good, like, you know, just in that, I don't even know what it is. Like, I
all
was
right,
like...
Here's our moment of Mike crushing on Tilly every episode.
Does that happen? Is that a thing that happens? Like all right. Well, I don't know. I think she looked great. Like, she always looks great, but just... I was like, is that like, it's like it's almost like a Barbarella style, except she's not showing a lot of flesh, but it still looks kind of sexy.
You like the gold and the straight
hair. I like the gold and straight hair. And my wife was like, looks like she's going to the club. I'm like, yeah.
I thought as soon as they took off like that main like plate of armor,
yeah,
it looks like Judge Dredd outfits.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
In the future, Mega City 1. I was like, yes, I'm down for that.
But again, it's very kind of Klingon style armor. We wear armor just when we're hanging out at the bar. Like, it's kind of like that.
Because you might kill each other on the elevator.
You might.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of Klingonish. Yeah.
But way cooler.
I love the scene where she has to play the captain for the first time. Well, what the heck, guys? What the heck? So
what the heck, hell.
What the hell? I should say hell. Yes.
But she turned it around. She got to go real quick, though.
Very true. Very true. Okay. Let's talk about Mr. Ash Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to recap what we learned about him and what we didn't learn? What is still out there? Like, what questions do we still have?
Okay. So I'll take a stab at this. What I saw was he thought that he was having these flashbacks of torture. So a really bad idea was he went to go see Laurel. And she started talking to him and got him to open the door.
He opens the door.
That I mean, dumb. Effortlessly.
She's
like, hey, open that. And he's like, oh, cool. Yeah, no problem there.
And so she starts reciting this poem that is supposed to bring out Vok. Right. And you hear Vok's voice, right? Kind of talking back to her and who are you, you know, where are you going? And Kaelef. And I was like, okay, so Vok is in there. So every theory or thought we had about Vok being Tyler was somewhat correct.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't quite take, he pushes her back in there, seals her off, and kind of runs away. And I think he's struggling with who he is, but there are these moments, these flashbacks where he's coming out, and it left me with the question of, can you trust him?
Can you trust him? What I love here is Shahzad Latif is doing a really good job dealing with this complicated storyline, because he's not only playing Ash Tyler, he's playing an Ash Tyler who's grappling with his own identity, who also might be Vok, right? So it's a pretty complicated role, and he has a lot to sell, not only with the early scene we saw where he's piloting the drone ship and trying to
cut out that little transponder or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And I thought it was really a good idea to show that his PTSD is getting in the way of him doing his work with that little hand module he was using.
Made me think, Burnham, what the fuck?
Yeah, she should know better.
How many times do you have to keep, like, immaturely putting your own little impulses in front of the safety of everyone else? Like, no lesson learned, even after she went to prison for life and got a little second chance.
That's how she do.
She's like, but I'm in love. I have puppy love right now for Vok.
But, Latif is doing great. The whole PTSD arc, I really like. I think it's really good. And then the extra layer they're adding to this character is just nuts, and it's just fraught with so many interesting possibilities. I'm liking where it's going. Do you have any more theories, Grant, on the Ash Vok situation?
I think that we're going to have him struggling not only with trying to be this other person for a purpose that was wholly contingent upon our other universe. But once he does kind of come to grips with two people inside of his mind, and now he's trapped in this mirror universe without that purpose, he's going to look at Laurel and he's going to look at this other family. I mean, my prediction would be that he's going to have to kill her.
Kill Laurel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting because at the end of the episode, we get Tyler telling Burnham, no matter what happens, I'll protect you.
Yeah,
hedging his bets. Really? Like, my guess is at some point you're going to try and kill her too. So,
hey, I got your back. And if ever it looks like I might have killed someone like Colbert, you got my back too, right? We're good.
It's the most tragic, like, you know, even though we saw a love relationship pretty much end in this episode, what's going on with Burnham and Ash is just the most tragic love story, because even though we were suspect of Ash at the beginning, I think we all kind of like their chemistry and we kind of like where that was going. And then now it's getting deeper and we just know it. I think it's just going to end with her with a gun to his head having to kill him.
Well, and it brings up the question.
Oh, kill him?
Yeah.
He's too fascinating a character. I think they're going to keep that actor.
She's the lead. I mean, she's at least going to try to kill him. Mm. But I think the question that it brings up for me is not thinking about kind of Ash, but thinking about Vok. Could Vok love Burnham?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, no. I think Ash could.
Yeah, but Ash does. If Vok is in there and Vok comes out,
yeah,
can Vok love Burnham? And I think if we go back to the pilot, you know, one thing that we saw was that we watched Burnham kill T'Kuvma and Vok was there. I mean, this is his god for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want, like, at some point, Vok is going to look at Burnham as, I have to kill you, just like he killed Giorgio. And so that dynamic, you've got these two kind of characters.
I don't think Vok can love Burnham. I think he might love the taste of her skull meat, though.
This is probably true.
Yeah.
Do you have any human skull meat around here?
But when you look at these, when you look at Vok and Tyler and Burnham, it's more than just kind of a love triangle and I'm not who I say I am. They had this moment in the very beginning where it was really about murdering gods, right?
Yeah. Oh,
like it was at the end of it, Giorgio and Tecuvma were dead. And so it'll be interesting to see if love can exist in these two people, knowing that that's in the background.
It's a Romeo and Juliet story in space, guys.
So I want to talk about Lorca.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
I love it. Rocking his Han Solo jacket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And doing his little Scottish accent for a little bit.
Oh, my God. That was so good.
Was that a Scotty?
That was a Scotty.
It's got to be because Scotty is the engineer of the first Starfleet engineer we ever knew in Star Trek. So,
and,
yeah.
And Jason Isaacs is actually British, right?
He's British, yeah.
Yeah. But I love at the beginning where it seems like most of us in the audience know that Lorca's the one who put them in this mirror universe.
Feels like it.
He pulled some shenanigans and he put them there. And then he goes, oh, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's like we're in like some other universe, guys.
Cut.
And it was like, yeah, you asshole. You totally did this, didn't you?
Yeah, we saw you play with your iPad before the jump, man.
But we get a little bit of universe history, conveniently, because Burnham pulls up files that just magically have enough detail on all of them.
Well, those are the files that Ash got from the wreckage.
From the Vulcan wreckage?
From the Vulcan, Klingon, Andorian.
Well, why did they have that much info?
What's interesting is that the Vulcan, the Andorians, and the Klingons are allied, and they're the rebels. They're the good guys in this universe. That's pretty cool.
But they also have meticulous records, including like headshots of everyone, so they know how to... Whatever. Okay.
It's a hand wave, man. It's a hand wave.
Anyway, what we get is that Lorca was apparently the captain of the Baran and escaped, and there is a Lorca out there, which makes me wonder if it wasn't so accidental that Lorca jumped over to this universe, or if this is the evil Lorca always has been.
Yeah, let me take the temperature of the room. Do you guys think this is actually the mirror universe Lorca we've been seeing since the first episode?
Do.
You do? What are you feeling?
I like that. Yeah, I'm with it.
I'm with it, too. I think so, too. He slides right into everything that's going on so quickly here. And I know he's the captain. I know he's a leader. But he just felt more comfortable here to me.
It did seem as though, for the first time, like I was getting a complete Lorca.
Yeah.
Right? Like he does seem really comfortable moving and kind of telling people, hey, do whatever you have to do. Like, this is what we're going to do. Like, my first thought was, wow, this guy is just made for war. But I think, kind of looking back, no, he was made for this universe.
He's cutthroat and impulsive in a way that belongs in the mirrorverse, right?
Uh-huh. Totally.
And when they pitch the idea of, oh, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to go back onto the Shenzhou and we're going to act like, oh, I've been undercover and I captured him. I'm like, is that really the best idea you guys got? Do you guys want to take a little bit more time, more than a couple hours, to think things through? You're in a whole another universe. And they're like, no, we're going to go with this. I'm like, oh, impulsive Lorca. It just makes sense. This is the evil one.
Well, I mean, I think that's interesting. And the other part of that is that little nugget that they gave us about when they came over, the other Discovery went to their universe.
Okay, yeah, that felt like a really quick, almost throwaway line, but is that the case? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's huge, though, because it made me wonder, will Lorca be responsible for whatever shenanigans they're up to, right? Because, I mean, they're going to show up with this ISS Discovery and just start, I mean, Captain Killy is just going to start killing people.
Pounding on her gold breastplate. So, yeah. Okay. So maybe I missed this. Did we get confirmation that the ISS Discovery, the one that zapped to the Prime Universe, do they also have a spore drive?
It did not sound like.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think they said anything to that effect.
Right.
But I'm doubting they do, because it works narratively for our Star Trek universe, right? That the spore drive is never delivered anywhere. Right. And they would want to keep that proprietary anyway. Sure. So the only one that exists is now in the hands here, right?
Okay, so was there an explanation as to why the Mirror Universe Discovery zapped to the Prime Universe when we zapped over?
Not a real explanation. No. It just sounded like it was a swap out. So it's kind of like...
Somehow, yeah.
Yeah, it sounded like they were just turning to the audience saying, this is what happened to the other ship, so
you're right.
Just leave it alone.
So you don't have two discoveries in the same universe.
Well, I would, you know, that seems like an okay thing to do because I think I want to see that. I want to see Discovery versus Discovery.
I mean, who doesn't want to see that?
And I want to see the show build up to that.
I mean, do you guys feel that this is only going to be until like the end of this season or the next, and we're eventually going to go back to that main timeline?
You know, I don't know, because this Star Trek series is breaking all the rules from the, you know, when you think about the old Star Trek series. In the old Star Trek series, like Clyde was saying earlier, a mirror universe storyline was a two-parter at best, and maybe they did it once every few seasons, right? But here, it makes sense narratively, it makes sense thematically for Discovery and the characters to hang out in the Mirror Universe for a really long time. If not the rest of the season, then maybe next season too, maybe beyond. For a number of reasons, like we don't have that spore drive in our other Star Trek shows. There's a lot of stuff established in Discovery, which is a prequel that is not carried over to the Star Trek shows that take place after it. So they just hang out in the Mirror Universe and affect the Mirror Universe, which we don't really know a lot about. That would make sense.
Like I said, I think we're looking at a little bit of sliders here where they're never getting back to that original universe.
I would like that too. That'd be a good storyline. Like,
I'm definitely like
Sam,
thinking that right
Sam
now.
Beckett, like, you know,
Quantum Leap.
When do I get the jump home, right?
It definitely feels that way. I think they're going to be trapped forever trying to get back there. But this is a fish out of water Star Trek series. And we're going to get reveals of more and more of the different members of the crew as we need to become a lot more familiar with them.
Well, and if we remember, I mean, toward the end of that final, kind of the winter finale, things weren't looking good for Lorca, right? Like they were, hey, come on back to Starbase. We're going to reward you and you're doing great. And
he doesn't want to be there.
Well, and everybody knows that, like, that was, you know, we're coming for you, right? Like, mm-hmm. The minute you get here, you're off that ship and we're going to give it to somebody else. So there's no way he wants to get back there.
There's no incentive for Burnham either, really. I mean,
no.
Although she seemed resigned to her fate, but yeah, why bother?
Yeah, because once the war's over, she's probably no longer serving and she's back in jail.
Well, I think it's also interesting. She looked pretty comfortable in that chair.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
She was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna sit in this chair. I just killed a man. That's fucked up.
And her getting that chair happened very soon after Lorca tells her, you're destined for great things. Again, telling her, you know, you're supposed to be at a high level. You're going to get there. It's destiny. And then all of a sudden, she's offered that chair.
See, and if we go back to the episode where Saru was on the planet and it was hard for him to leave. See, I think we're going to get a little bit of that in this universe too.
Sure.
Like with a little bit of this, the taste of blood in their mouth, it's good, especially for Burnham, who's now Captain Burnham of the Shenzhou. I think it could be a little tough to kind of go, wait, like, who am I? Who am I really? And then try and pull it back together to go back to being Specialist Burnham.
Well, imagine the temptation of something like the Mirror Universe, where you go, you zap there and you realize, wow, the people who rise up in this world are out for themselves and they're evil and they're assholes, you know? And I get to play asshole in this world if I want to. That can be pretty alluring to some people.
I'm kind of good at it.
I'm pretty good
at
it.
Tabula rasa going on here, and suddenly I'm in the captain's seat.
Exactly. So, yeah, the pull to act like a darker version of yourself to get that power is definitely a theme that's going to be explored here with Michael Burnham.
I'm just still surprised that Cooper really thought, you know, what I'll do is not only will I kill you, but I'll give you a nice little monologue before I do it. like really, you should have looked over and thought, yeah, that's out of my weight class. So I'm just going to have to take it.
See, in the Mirror Universe, they get to go ahead and give a monologue before they kill someone, and the other people just respectfully wait and then go, oh, I'm surprised.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about the Mirror Universe. You can be a little, it seems like it's licensed for the writers to be campier, right?
And if there's any doubt that this is the Mirror Universe, if you look at the logo for their Terran Empire, it's got the planet Earth. And all the continents are flipped on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's nice. A mirror Earth that's actually just the reverse version. And I was like, oh, perfect. Detail.
Perfect. Okay, anything else we want to cover on this episode, guys? I mean, we just watched it. We're kind of, it feels like we're going deep. We might just be covering the surface. But anything else you want to talk about before I dive into some of these iTunes reviews?
So at the end of the episode, the very last scene, we see Lorca being tortured. What do you think's next for Lorca?
Besides trying to escape the force lightning telephone booth he's trapped in?
Pretty much. I mean,
it felt very Bill and Ted, right?
Yeah. Where's Rufus?
I'm just wondering what's in store for him.
I imagine that now that Burnham has just taken the captain's chair, she's going to take him out of there pretty soon after. And they are going to use this opportunity and the ship and the intel that they're going to gather to go after the Empire and the Emperor
that
in the palace.
That might be true. Although their mission is to get home, obviously, right? And I think the exposition was that they need to get to this Defiant ship, right? Because that will help them get home. Is that right?
Yeah, the idea is that since it found its way there,
yeah,
at least finding the information about how they got there will help them get back.
But they're going to have to, that journey or that quest will definitely lead them to whatever the palace is and whoever this emperor is.
Giorgio.
It's going to be Giorgio. Because Michelle Yeoh's coming back.
I mean, it's Michelle Yeoh. You can't kill her off in the first episode
and
then walk away from it.
All right, guys, if you disagree or agree with our takes on this episode, hit us up at StarTrekPod.com. We got links to our Twitter page there, links to our Facebook, and links to our listing in all the podcast apps. And please review us on Apple iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. We're also on Spotify now.
Give us those 5-star ratings. Don't waste your time on a 4 or 3.
No.
That only hurts us.
We like
unnecessarily.
We like the 5 stars, like the latest one we got from Crosspatch Bear on Apple iTunes. 5 stars. Love you guys. LOL Stamets' illegal metagenetic experiment of turning himself into a navigator from Dune shows Star Trek's love of science and life.
Yeah.
5 stars. Whatever that means, yes. Thank you.
I love all the references.
I've never seen Dune. Is that another one I need to see?
You know,
don't roll your eyes. So
I would say read Dune. Don't watch the movie.
It's hard to say do it now. I mean, it would be great like 10 years ago.
It's like Rocky Horror Picture or something. Like, there's no point unless you saw it at a certain
age. One of David Lynch's finest, I'd say. Wait 2 or 3 years, there'll be a reboot.
I love how Stamets is the like white-eyed, like new potentially good guy wizard all seeing. And Stamets is this dark-eyed evil wizard who might be the mirror universe, and they're just like these opposing forces as well. It reminds me of Lost.
The dark and the light.
Yeah, it's John Locke and Smoke Monster.
All right, I think that's all we got for this episode of Star Trek Discovery. Thanks for listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. Again, I'm Mike. With me was
Clyde.
And
Grant.
Grant, tell the people where they can find you online.
You guys can find me on Twitter at Baron Von Grant, and I should have my links to all the other podcasts and miscellaneous things I'm doing from there.
Clyde.
You can find me at Clyde Haynes on Twitter, and all my other podcasts and information is at keyandclyde.com.
You can find me at Mike Moody on Twitter. Again, follow us at Star Trek Pod. Visit our podcast network, Permanent Record, permanentrcrd.com. Support us on Patreon. That's the only way we keep this podcast going, keep the lights on, keep the mics humming. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
And if you guys give $2 an episode or more, you can join us on the Slack channel where we can discuss this more. We have a good gaggle of people that have joined us there already. It's really fun to kind of chat with them.
Everybody's already talking about this episode. I'm looking forward to diving into our Slack channel. So yeah, if you want to join that, $2 at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. That's all we got. Long live the Empire.
Long live the Empire.